The One Piece is real. Yo, what's up? Welcome to Kinda Funny Games Daily for Monday, March 6, 2023. I'm one of your hosts, Blessing Adelier Jr. Joining me is the LaCroix Poppy himself, a.k.a. the Grande Ice Coffee Boy himself.
Oh, Trenta, baby.
Oh, sorry, the Trenta Ice Coffee. I can't tell the sizes just from visualization.
Oh, yeah.
I need the actual
label. It's 30 fluid ounces, baby.
Oh, shit. Do you drink that whole thing?
Oh, yeah.
And you fill water and you drink it again?
Yeah.
You're a crazy boy. You're a crazy guy.
Crazy Tim Geddes. Crazy world, everybody.
How's it going?
How you doing? Real good. What a weekend this has been.
Yeah?
Oh, yeah.
What'd you do this weekend?
Fun. Well, watch Last of Us, which was always a blast. Of course, you can check out our latest episode breakdown. We had Troy Baker on, which is pretty damn cool. Fantastic episode. Ton of fun behind the scenes stuff. We'll definitely check that out. But otherwise, played so many video games this weekend.
Oh.
Played, watched so many shows this weekend. I went outside a couple times. That was fine, whatever. But, oh, man. What a time to be alive. It's just, things are just good out
there. You know what else happened this weekend, Tim?
What, Barrett?
Bless got a fucking fresh-ass cut.
Yeah. For a second, if you're an audio listener, get over here on the video side. Y'all need to see this shit.
Oh, man.
It's good.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Yeah, that's what I did this weekend. I took 2 days off. I took Thursday and Friday off just because it's been super busy, right? Like, I did the PSVR 2 review. I did one long review. Greg was out for a week there. And so, like, I started falling behind on, like, free time shit. And so I was like, you know what? I need to take 2 days. I need to finally get a haircut because I've been putting that off forever. I need to go to the eye doctor. I also need to rest and also need to run a bunch of errands. So I did all that. And I was like, you know what? You know, no video games. I'm going to take a break. Let me just keep myself from burning out. And then you know what I did?
Play some video games.
I played a fuck ton of Metroid Prime.
Fuck yes, you did.
I played.
We got him, boys. We got him.
So much fucking Metroid Prime. It's funny because I legitimately was like, I'm not touching video games for the next 4 days. You know, I just need a refresh. I need a palate cleanser.
How long did you hold out?
2 hours. I lasted a few hours on Thursday before I was like, oh, you know what? I kind of want to go back to Metroid Prime. And so I started playing it. And let me tell you, this video game is really good.
It's real good.
It's a really good video game. Yo, Metroid Prime game.
I know it's kind of funny games deal. I know there's so much news you have to talk about. Although, another slow day.
Yeah. Like, I mean, there is a Metroid
great
story.
Big stories. Yeah. But I need to know.
Of course.
What are your thoughts on Metroid Prime? How far are you and what are your thoughts?
Okay. So how would I even describe where I'm at? I've gone through like the phase on mines.
Okay.
I feel like I must be really far. The last ability, one of the latest abilities I got is like to move through water at a decent pace, if that paints a picture. Mm-hmm. I played like over 10 hours because I'd be getting lost in that game.
Oh, yeah.
Which I know is the whole point of the game. But yeah, like I've been enjoying it a lot. It's funny. And I know this is probably somewhat of a hot take, right? And it's just a personal taste thing. Metroidvanias aren't my jam. I don't really flock to Metroidvanias. When I see Metroidvania on a box of a game, I'm like, all right, cool. You know, I played through plenty and I've like enjoyed them fine, right? Like I really like Ori. I really like Guacamelee, right? I really enjoyed Metroid Dread, but that's more so just for the mechanics and I like the platforming of those games and just playing those games. Metroidvanias, the idea of getting lost and getting to a place and being like, all right, I probably need another ability, and then going and then unlocking ability and being like, I don't know where to go now. I just hate that feeling of being lost all the time. Metroid Prime, for me, I think fixes a lot of that just because they have a good system where you get a new ability about 10, 20 minutes in, you'll get a ping on your map. It's like, hey, there's this weird thing going on here. You might want to check here. And it's made that feeling of getting lost and really trying to explore and figure shit out a lot more manageable to me. But honestly, the thing that has really taken this game above and beyond for me has just been all of the aesthetic stuff going on. The soundtrack, the sounds, it sounds so unique.
The word. You got to say the word.
Which word?
If you're talking about Metroid Prime, we got to talk about atmosphere.
Oh, that's the exact word I'm looking for, right, is the atmosphere. The atmosphere is so good. The design room to room of the encounters you're getting in and how the encounters will change after you get an ability. So you come back to the same room and all of a sudden, oh, shit, these guys are here. I wasn't expecting these guys. The notes that are left around that...
Scanning.
Yeah, all the scanning, like shit that I honestly, for a lot of games, wouldn't care about because when I'm not a big reading the emails in a video game sort of person. I don't like to stop to reach it. I prefer like voice recordings and that sort of thing. I am stopping to read everything going on because in Metroid Prime, I find it all so fascinating. I'm enjoying reading all the notes from what went down with the Chozo and then also what's going on with the Space Pirates and seeing the Space Pirates kind of react. Oh, shit. She's here. Like, Samus is here. Like, we gotta deal with this shit. That shit is so cool. And then the game is just so smartly designed. Like, here's the thing.
I love this, dude. I'm so happy for you.
Like, Metroidvanias for me are so hit and miss in terms of, like, I get what a Metroidvania is. I feel like, to some extent, once you played one Metroidvania, you kind of played a lot of them. I am so enthralled with the abilities that they give you and the ways in which, like, the speed ability when you go into your ball mode, for example, where you can use that to then get up of, like, the half pipe structures. Mm-hmm. I never noticed the half pipe structures until that became a thing, and I was that like, is, "Yeah," and I was like, design, "Fuck, dude, man. How smart is that?" I would not have like guessed that that would have been a mechanic, you know. Like, and there are plenty of moments like that. I think they parse that stuff out super well. They give you different abilities at a decent pace, and at first, I wasn't feeling the controls all the way, right? Like switching between weapons, switching between visor modes.
Yeah.
A lot of it was cumbersome. I'm at the point now where it is second nature, where I'm just going back and forth between weapons, going back. And I'm understanding that I just need to scan everything. Like, as long as you scan everything, you'll be fine. Yep. Like, you'll figure out what puzzle or what thing you need to solve. I've just been enjoying it so much. And also, there are parts of that game that are hard as fuck. Like, there's a section, I believe, in the Phase on Mines that goes for a while without you finding a save point. And I died maybe 3 or 4 times, and I was like, all right, let's fucking lock in. Let's do this. And it came down to the wire.
Yeah.
It was a section where I had to turn into a ball and navigate like this electricity maze and not get hit. And I had like 2 hits on me before I was getting knocked out. And I knew for a fact that all I needed to do was get through this maze before I hit the next save point. And I was sweating, Tim. I was sweating, but it was fantastic, and I made it through it.
That's that old school game design where getting to a save point is the most important thing. Yep. It's life and death, man. Like, it reminds me of back in the day, when you're playing Game Boy and you know the battery's going out, you see the game starting to fade just a little bit. You're like, oh, dude,
it's
no.
So stressful. And you know, like, the game doesn't give a fuck about your feelings either.
Oh, no,
like, that's the thing.
No.
Is like, the games aren't really designed for like auto saving and all this stuff to really account for when you lose and don't want to lose that much progress. And so I'm like, at any point, I'm like, dude, I might lose 20 minutes of progress, and it's gonna be heartbreaking.
It's a bless. I'm so damn excited for you that you're experiencing this. It sounds like you're pretty damn far. Like, yeah, I imagine you're planning to beat this game.
Yeah. Oh, right? Yeah.
I think you might need to do it in the next 3 days.
Why so? Oh, because
on March
9th,
Metroid Fusion's coming out. And now, here's the thing. I'm gonna sell you on Fusion.
All right.
You can beat that game in 5 hours.
Okay, I like hearing that.
It's a 5-hour game. It is such a different era of video game, but I think it'd be really cool for you to play Metroid Prime and then Fusion back-to-back, because those games came out on the same day originally, and we played them together. Like, I remember playing through both games at the same time, and it was, you could actually link them. You could unlock the Fusion suit in Prime if you use the GBA transfer cable thing to the GameCube, but this game is incredible. It's a little bit more linear and action-based than some of the other Metroid games, and you're definitely not going to get lost in this one.
Like, okay. I'm fine for that.
Very just one-to-one experience, and it's very fucking awesome, man. Like, Fusion is a very, not the best Metroid game, but a very, very special one that I think is a lot of people's, if not favorite, it's in the conversation.
Oh yeah. I think I've reached the point, and I'm sure this isn't a shock, but Metroid Prime is probably the best Metroidvania I've ever played. I think I can say that confidently at this point. I'm down to try out Fusion if I'm getting more of that goodness out of that. I know it's different, but I did like Metroid Dread as well. So
yeah, I think you're gonna like Fusion a lot. But anyways,
hell yeah.
Enough about that.
Let's talk about today's stories, which include a new Dragon Ball Z Budokai Tenkaichi game has been announced. Let's fucking go. Metroid Prime is killing it in sales and more, because this is Kinda Funny Games Daily. Each and every weekday at 10 a.m. live right here on youtube.com/kindafunnygames and twitch.tv/kindafunnygames. We run you through the nerdy news need to know about. If you're watching live, you can correct us when we get stuff wrong by going to kindoffunny.com/you'rewrong. If you don't want to watch live, you can watch later on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames, or you can listen later on podcast services around the globe by searching for Kinda Funny Games Daily. Remember, you can use Epic Creator Code Kinda Funny on all Epic Store and Epic in-game purchases like Rocket League and Fortnite to help support the channel. To be a part of the show, to kindoffunny.com/KFGD to write in with your questions, squad ups, and more. And remember, patreon.com/kindoffunny will get you the show ad-free plus a bevy of bonus content. Housekeeping for you, our review and breakdown of The Last of Us HBO's latest episode is up right now on youtube.com/kindoffunny, and you want to check that out because, of course, that episode features the one, the only, original Joel from the game, Troy Baker. Let me tell you, he breaks it down in that episode.
He breaks it down, man. I love talking to him because he can make anything 10 times more interesting. And he just has a way of storytelling, even when we're not telling stories, that is just an art.
Hell yeah, yeah. Go check out that. Well, go watch the Last Switch HBO episode and then watch the episode of Screencast. Because, it is worth the dollar for sure. Thank you to our Patreon producers, Tripod Plus Plus, Is that correct?
It is correct.
A tripod plus plus, and then Delaney Twining. Today brought to you by Shady Rays and Honey, but we'll tell you about that later. For now, let's begin with what is, and forever will be, the Roper Report. It's time for some news. We have five stories today.
A baker's dozen.
Starting with our number one. A new Dragon Ball Z Budokai Tenkaichi has been revealed. This is Wesley LeBlanc at Game Informer. And Tim, let me tell you, I was driving home yesterday from hanging out with a friend. I get home and I open up Twitter and I see in my notifications just a tag. It's at Blessing Jr., right? And it was Alex Van Aken. Just my name, nothing else. He was tagging me under a tweet. And I knew for a fact, Alex Van Aken knows me very well, right? I know for a fact if he's tagging me in something, it has to be something that is monumental. It has to be something that means a lot to me. And I scrolled up to see what the tweet he was tagging me under was. And I could never expect anything as hype as this for my own personal taste. Dragon Ball Z Budokai Tenkaichi. Again, I am reading directly from Wesley LeBlanc at Game Informer. Bandai Namco has revealed a new Dragon Ball Z Budokai Tenkaichi game. Yesterday, the publisher released a short teaser trailer for the game, running less than a minute, that highlights footage from previous Budokai Tenkaichi games before showcasing what appears to be the new one. In the footage of the new game, we see Goku powering up, and then the words, quote, get ready for battle, and, quote, a new sparking begins, appears on screen.
Bro, I just got chills looking at this, and I don't care about Dragon Ball.
Let's
that was
awesome. Go. Now, this is true. I had not watched Dragon Ball Super, but I believe this is Goku transforming into Super Saiyan God because he has the blue hair. And for reference, Dragon Ball Budokai Tenkaichi, I believe, was called Sparking in Japan, so that's where the sparking theme comes from. The trailer ends with a new Budokai Tenkaichi begins, quelling any doubt that this is a new game in the series that has laid dormant for 16 years. Dragon Ball Z Budokai Tenkaichi 3 was released in 2007. The teaser trailer doesn't indicate if this is Budokai Tenkaichi 4 or something else, but it's exciting nonetheless to see that Bandai Namco hasn't forgotten about the series. It is somewhat surprising to see this announcement, though, considering Dragon Ball FighterZ exists. Budokai Tenkaichi is a fighting game series as well, but to see a new one before a sequel to FighterZ, which was released in 2018, is something I imagine not many people would have predicted. Tim, is this something that you would have predicted?
Absolutely not. I do know that people love the Budokai games and they do very, very well. But FighterZ kind of hit different, and but maybe just hit different because of the level of quality, even if you aren't a Dragon Ball fan. Like, it's just a great fighting game as well. I am saddened by the fact that I am not a Dragon Ball person, and it's simply because I didn't have access to Cartoon Network growing up. So there was no way for me to watch it. Kevin was super into it. Alfredo was super into it. I remember he would, there was a couple summers during high school where he would just straight up live at my house, and Alfredo would rent games from Gamefly, and he would always get every Budokai game and like play through it in my living room, and I'd watch it, and he fucking loved it so much. And I was like, this looks dope as shit. There's something about the aesthetic that they just nailed, like the cel-shaded look that so many games were going for, started in the PS1 era. We got like Simpsons Wrestling and things like that. But during the
Simpsons Wrestling, I love that as the example.
Exactly. But then like
you gone Jet Set,
and Jet Set as well. Yeah, and that type of thing. I'd say those are even more stylized though. Like,
yeah.
Whereas some of these are more like trying to look like a cartoon and emulate something that previously existed. Mm-hmm. And then the Budokai games always was like, there was a sense of momentum of them flying around and the punches like blasting you miles and miles and miles that I never thought could be captured in a video game. And I remember just being wowed by it, not knowing what the hell was going on. But this must mean everything to you, being somebody that actually loves these things.
So like Budokai, when you talk about the cel shading, Budokai 3 for me is the one where if you pick up Budokai 3 today, that game still looks great. And I think that's because they got the art style so great. The Budokai games to me meant a lot. I came in with Budokai 1. I remember vividly going over to my cousin's house, him owning Budokai 1, us playing through the story mode, and we did all the missions, right? And like the Budokai campaign for the first game was so notoriously hard, where one of the first missions you're doing, was it Raditz? I think, yeah, you're fighting Raditz, and you're doing, like, the Goku and Piccolo versus Raditz thing, where you're playing as Goku, you have Raditz in your arms, and you're trying to like line him up for Piccolo to do his special beam cannon. I sound like a fucking nerd, but you're him doing his blast to then take both of you out.
You don't sound like one, you are one.
I know, I am a nerd. And you have to rotate the aim lock stick back and forth to like kind of center him up. And that was, it was so difficult, and it was one of the first things you do in the game. So that is like burned into my memory. But yeah, I played Budokai 1 at his place, ended up getting that game, ended up becoming obsessed with it. And I would say that the Budokai series is responsible for me being into fighting games. Right, like before that, before that it was Smash Brothers, but like Smash Brothers was very much a platform fighter, right? Like it wasn't traditional in the way that Dragon Ball Z Budokai was more of a traditional fighting game. But yeah, played the hell out of that. I remember renting Budokai 2 and playing the hell out of that game, and that game had a really cool like tabletop story mode, campaign mode that separated it out from Budokai 1 for me. And then Budokai 3 was the one that I think a lot of people see as special because the gameplay really hit with Budokai 3, and then also the character roster was expanded. It included GT characters, and it felt more like a full-fledged, oh shit, this is modern Dragon Ball. But then the transition to Tenkaichi.
So let me stop you there.
What up?
I got questions.
Yeah, what up?
What is Tenkaichi?
So Tenkaichi was sort of the next step / spinoff of the Budokai series, where Budokai is traditional 2D fighter in like a 3D space, of course, right? But you are
like Tekken in air.
Yeah, exactly. It's like Tekken, except yeah, you're flying in air and all that stuff, right? Think of like Soul Calibur and stuff like that. It's a traditional fighting game where you're on the same plane as like your opponent and you're fighting. Tenkaichi basically shifted it into a 3D arena fighter to where now the camera is shifted behind the back of the character that you're playing as, and you have a big arena that you're flying around. And that shit blew my mind at the time. I hadn't seen an arena fighter before that, and I would go as far as to say that Tenkaichi, and this might be a kindoffunny.com/you're wrong thing, I think Tenkaichi really like made that a thing for anime fighters. Like everybody started doing that. You got Naruto Ultimate Ninja Storm after that, My Hero One's Justice from My Hero Academia, Jump Force, all that stuff. I think all of those are like the children of Tenkaichi. Mm-hmm. Again, correct me if I'm wrong. Tenkaichi shifted into an arena fighter, and I think for a lot of people, it can be hit or miss depending on what you really want out of the series, but I really enjoyed it. For me, playing it back in the day, it felt like legitimately I was playing in an anime where I'm turning into Super Saiyan mid-fight and like flying around, and I have to aim my Kamehameha at my opponent and like make sure I don't miss them and all that stuff. And by the time you get to Tenkaichi 3, that shit just amped up. You had one of the biggest character rosters I remember ever experiencing in a fighting game like that, right? It's like 70-something characters, 80-something characters, something like that. And it was just fun as hell, right? Like, the story mode was fun. They had, like, team fights where you can do, like, 5v5 fights and shit. I had a fucking blast with that game. And I think that game, for many people, just strikes them as, like, a nostalgia. Oh, man, this is the peak of where Dragon Ball Z fighting games are at, right? I would say it's probably Budokai 3 and then Tenkaichi 3 for a lot of people. But then over the years, you kind of lost that. That was the PS2 era and Wii. In the PS3 era, you had Dragon Ball Burst Limit, which is like, that was another 2D fighter akin to Budokai. And that was fine. You had Raging Blast 1 and 2. Those were more Tenkaichi style games. But I think for the most part, those were kind of forgettable. And then you just got more and more that felt like they weren't moving the needle, including Dragon Ball Z Ultimate Tenkaichi, which was a Tenkaichi game that came out during the PS3 era that just fucking didn't, that was whack. That didn't give us what we wanted out of the series. Wasn't until Dragon Ball Fighters where it was like, oh shit, all right, you guys are giving a Dragon Ball Z game to Arc System Works to really put their special touch. They've made Guilty Gear, they've made plenty of 2D anime style fighters that hit for both the art style and for the gameplay. They took that, applied it to Dragon Ball, and the rest is history, right? Like, we look at that as the best Dragon Ball fighting game, if not maybe one of the best fighting games. Like, Dragon Ball Fighters really took it above and beyond, which makes the place where this story picks up very interesting, because they talk about the fact that, yeah, this is kind of weird because Dragon Ball Fighters is there, right? Like, what is the purpose of making a Tenkaichi 4 or a Tenkaichi reboot when you could just make another Dragon Ball Fighters, or when like you have Dragon Ball Fighters there doing what 10 million or 8 million copies in sales as of 2021. Like, Dragon Ball Fighters is killing it. And I also think it's fascinating. But I think for me, this is purely a, hey, there's an audience out there that loved this growing up. If you looked on Twitter last night as they announced this, Twitter was blowing up about it.
Oh yeah.
The fan base is going crazy about it. And it's just a thing where it's been a long time. Them leading off that trailer, showing footage of the original Tenkaichi games, and then leading into the footage of the new game, it looks like they're taking more from that original Tenkaichi trilogy than something like Ultimate Tenkaichi, which totally just felt like an entirely different thing. And yeah, like, it's something that I'm excited for. I think both of these things can coexist between Fighters and Tenkaichi, just because they're very different styles of games that I think are going to appeal to different audiences, interestingly enough, even though they're both Dragon Ball fighting games.
You know what's really cool about this? And I know you're already, like, hyped to the max.
Yeah.
But this reminds me of a very similar marketing and rollout plan to a game I know me and you love very dearly, Sonic Mania. Mm. Where, hey, there's the classics that we love, that we're nostalgic about, that hold up in so many ways, that have some issues in others, whatever. Then there was a lot of bad games. They did Sonic 4, but that wasn't the real Sonic 4. We all fucking know. Same thing like what you're talking about with all the Raging Blaze or whatever.
Raging Glass, yeah.
All that stuff. It's like, okay, this is it, but it ain't it. They're just making games, but the magic's gone. What they did in that trailer, for me, they told me, look, all the OGs you love in that CRT TV, look how that could look now.
Yep.
It's the same
and
vibe.
And add in
same
Super
tone.
Dragon Ball shit that, or Dragon Ball Super shit that is hot right now. People are loving that. You know, there is so much opportunity for good here that they could hit. I am worried just for the fact that arena fighting games aren't in their hottest place right now. Mm-hmm. Like, they've not really popped off since Tenkaichi. Like, I know there's the crowd out there that loves the Naruto Ultimate Ninja Storm games, but those are probably the only other ones. Like, those are not my hero. Those are Demon Slayer arena fighter that came out about a year or so ago, and like,
it was fine.
Yeah, not many of us talked
same
about
with
it.
The My Hero ones as well.
Yeah,
they were fine.
My Hero was fine. Jump Force came out, fell flat again. Like, the Dragon Ball.
Yeah, here's
the
question
made,
though. This, with Budokai, like, and I know that this is like a dumb question because of just time and how it all works, but Budokai, even the best Budokai games, are they fine in the same way that you're talking about these other games are fine, or is it just like, no, those are special, and if they manage to pull that off in 2023 or 4, it could actually really hit in a way that's more than fine, or is fine the ceiling?
I genuinely think that the Tenkaichi games, especially as you get to 2 and 3, were great games. I think they were great. They weren't like 10 out of 10 games. Like, I think whenever you make a game in that genre, and like, there are going to be parts of it where people are like, okay, whatever, it's fine. But like, overall, I think those games are great. I think those games are really fun, and I think you can make a fun one of those in 2023. It's just been a long time since we've gotten a fun one of those. Like, Chad, if you have one that's come out recently, throw it at me. But like, I've as somebody who's paid loose attention to anime games for a while now, I've not seen ones that have blown people skirt up. Like, even during the last Nintendo Director State of Play, they had that trailer for the Naruto Ultimate Collection thing. And we're watching and we're like, all right, this looks cool. This looks fine. And nobody in chat was going crazy over it. I think everybody was just like, yeah, it's another one of these. I think you can make a good one of those, but it's just hard to have hope. It's just hard to be like, yeah, they're going to nail it. Because how do you nail it in 2023, right? Like, is that something that's going to be hot in 2023? I guess that's my question.
Bless, my question for you.
What up?
Is simple. Street Fighter 6. Mm-hmm. Tekken 8. Mortal Kombat 12, mm-hmm. Dragon Ball, Budokai, Tenkaichi 4.
Absolutely not.
You have to kill two of them. Only two get to live.
How dare you do this?
Right,
how
dare you do it?
As much as this appeals to me as a fan and as a fucking nerd, I first to die would be Dragon Ball Z.
Wow. Okay.
4.
Shit.
Yeah.
I didn't expect that.
Just out of pure like, I gotta look out for the world on this one.
Okay.
I gotta look out for the world on this one, all right? I'm taking the hit on Tenkaichi 4 so that the world can have the goodness of Mortal Kombat, Tekken, and Street Fighter. Okay, so narrowing it down to those three. Fuck. I might kill Street Fighter. I might kill Street
what?
Fighter.
What?
And this is me as a fan of Tekken and Mortal Kombat.
Yeah.
I fucking love Tekken and Mortal Kombat. And Street Fighter, I'm more of a newer fan.
Which I thought
Fighter.
This would be the one that you're like,
it probably will
be.
I mean, if you ask me this question a year from now, my answer might change. Yeah, I think I'll just kill Street Fighter.
Damn.
Just because, like, I really want to do another good-ass Tekken game. Like, Tekken 7 was so fucking good. And Tekken 8 looks fantastic. It's going to be current-gen exclusive, which is going to do a lot for it. And, like, Tekken 7 came out, I mean, it came out technically in like 2017 in the US or whatever, but it came out years before that in arcade and in Japan. And so it's been a while since we've gotten a ground up Tekken. So there's so much room for a technological leap there that could be very satisfying for me to play. And Mortal Kombat is just Mortal Kombat. I love Mortal Kombat. Fuck. Actually, no, I might change my answer to Mortal Kombat, because we've gotten to Mortal Kombat more recently.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
And we can rock with Mortal Kombat 11 for a little bit longer.
I love you,
I'm changing my answer to Mortal Kombat. Kill Mortal Kombat.
Well, there you go. What a time to be a fighting game fan.
Yeah, what a time. I'm very excited about all of this. I just hope it's good. I just hope whatever the next Tenkaichi thing is good. It's a tough hope to have, but I fucking love that they announced it this way. I think so far we're off to the right start.
Mm-hmm.
We're leading with the right foot.
Yes.
Story number two, Tim. Speaking of a right start, Metroid Prime comes in at number two on the UK charts.
Let's fucking go.
A great start to sales for Metroid Prime. This is Christopher Dring at gamesindustry.biz. Hogwarts Legacy narrowly holds on to the number one for a fourth consecutive week in the UK. The game retains the top spot in the physical retail charts despite a 30% drop in sales week on week. Its biggest challenger this week is Metroid Prime Remastered from Nintendo, which misses out on the number one by just 1,000 units.
Holy shit.
Yeah, that's not that much. That's really narrow. Metroid Prime Remastered was a surprise digital launch back in early February and has been available as a download for nearly a month. Even so, this is the fourth biggest physical Metroid game launch of all time, and sales of this boxed version are only 45% lower than what the original managed to do back in 2002.
Wow!
Yeah. Metroid Prime Remastered is the second biggest physical release of the year so far, ahead of the Dead Space remake and Fire Emblem Engage. Yeah.
Wait, that... Oh, I mean, I guess that just shows where the industry is headed.
Yeah.
Digital, baby.
Nintendo does not share digital sales, so we'll not know for sure how successful the game has been in the UK, but it appears that the surprise launch strategy has been effective. Also new this week is Wulong Fallen Dynasty from Koei Tecmo, which debuts at number 8. 96% of physical retail sales were on PlayStation platforms, although box sales of the game are low. We'll have a better idea of its performance once the digital data comes in. The final new release in the physical charts is Scars Above from Prime Matter, which comes in at number 22. Tim, what sticks out to you here the most?
I mean, Metroid selling well? Like, let's go. What timeline am I living in? This is so fantastic. I'm so excited for them. And there's so much here that I think is important to reiterate, where this does not include digital sales. This is just physical for a game that is really difficult to get physically. Like, you can't just go on Amazon right now and buy it. You can't go to GameSpot. You can't go to Best Buy. It's just not available, man. So
why isn't it available?
Because Nintendo didn't expect motherfuckers to buy it, but motherfuckers showed up. And what's extra crazy about this is the context that it was released. It was shadow dropped digitally. And it's still coming in at 1,000 copies less than Hogwarts fucking Legacy, right?
Yeah.
Coming in just the physical edition of it. Like, that is wild for Metroid Prime. Of course, this is still just the UK numbers we're talking about. And they always tell a story. They're usually more of like a tease towards the worldwide numbers we end up getting later. But they're always... There's evidence, right? Where there's smokes, there's fires, everybody. But I can't believe this, because Metroid has always been a franchise that is so core to the identity of Nintendo, but has never gotten out that mainstream appeal. It's never been one of the big blockbuster titles that they expect to make money from, that everybody is going to experience. And like, maybe at one time it was during Nintendo Super Nintendo era, but games were different then. We often talk about how even Chrono Trigger, which is one of the most iconic games of all time, only sold like the number is staggeringly low compared to what we'd talk about today for a success. So for Metroid Prime, I mean, we just gushed for 20 minutes about you being a newbie to it, and it's still holding up 20 years later, being a game that is like blowing your mind. It's great. They really did something special, and I hope that this is teeing up a success for Metroid Prime 4 and a positioning for Metroid Prime 4 as a core Nintendo franchise, where we got Dread and it was utterly fantastic. It sold super well too. Last year we saw Kirby in the Forgotten Land give new energy and life to Kirby and put Kirby on the biggest stage it's ever been on. Nintendo's really kind of using the Switch generation to its advantage in every way possible. Like, I think we're going to look back at this era of Nintendo and it's going to be unrivaled, man. Like, there is so much that they did for established franchises like Mario and Zelda, taking them to a level that we did not expect ever possible, but then also doing that for the majority of their other franchises.
a couple questions for you. When do we get Metroid 2 and 3 remastered? And do you think those hit the same sales as Metroid Prime currently?
So you're talking about Metroid Prime 2 and 3.
Sorry, yeah, Metroid Prime 2 and
3. So Jeff Grubb was on the show last week, and it was a great episode, and he always has great insight on things. He was saying that he does think that we will, he doesn't know anything, this was all just speculation, but he expects that we will get 2 and 3 at some point. I'm a little less sure of that. Metroid Prime 2 and 3 are great games, but where I look at Metroid Prime 1 as a 10, I look at Prime 2 and 3 as like 8 that I could understand 7.5s, you know? But even that, like, maybe that's even being too harsh, but the magic that 1 had, I think it really makes it stand out. I don't think that they will sell as well as this. I also expect that if we got them, they're not going to be as in-depth of a remaster. I think they'll be a little bit more straightforward up-res ports of the Metroid Prime Trilogy port that they already did on the Wii.
And my other question for you is, what do you want from Metroid Prime 4? You know, what takes Metroid Prime to the next level for you in a way that makes it a success in the way that we saw from Kirby and the Forgotten Land and a lot of the modern Switch iterations, right? Like Animal Crossing, New Horizons, and things like that.
I mean, I think just it living up and being good. Like, I don't think Metroid Prime 4 needs to Breath of the Wild Metroid Prime. Mm-hmm. Like, Metroid Prime did that for Metroid. It took the 2D worlds, and Metroid Prime is to Metroid what Mario 64 is to the 2D Mario series, right? Or Ocarina of Time is to the Zelda franchise. But when you look at Metroid went from Super Metroid on the Super Nintendo to Metroid Prime on the GameCube. It skipped the entire first iteration into 3D on the N64. It didn't have that version, right? Whereas you look at both Mario and Zelda, and, you know, time has changed this, but Wind Waker and Mario Sunshine were not met with, like, the same reception that Ocarina of Time and Mario 64 were. Whereas Metroid Prime came out, and it felt, like, to use words like next-gen, it's like, it felt so next-gen when we were playing it then. And the fact that we can still play it now and it holds up, it's, like, so impressive. So I think that we just don't get many games like that. So if they just kind of are able to recapture that magic again, that's really all they need to do. I think we're in more similar to a God of War situation than a Breath of the Wild situation, where it's going to be like, or God of War to Ragnarok is what I'm trying to say, where it's like, yeah, just do it again and more and like a little prettier and things like that. My biggest hesitation is I wish it would be on the next Switch. Like, I think that especially getting this and it being as fucking beautiful as it is, being a remaster of a 2002 game and it looks this good, I don't have too much faith that Metroid Prime 4 can look too much better.
I've been playing Metroid Prime, I was thinking the same thing. I was like, how much better is Metroid Prime 4 going to look than this? I expect it to look better, but can I expect from them to get out of the Switch in terms of fidelity? I'm not worried, but I'm just so curious. Like, is it an art style thing? Do they shift art direction to, like, account for the power of the Switch more and really go hard with it? We'll have to see.
We will have to see.
Do you know what you have to see, ladies and gentlemen? What we got over there on patreon.com/kindoffunnygames, of course, over there, you can get exclusive shows, you can get cool content, but also you can get the show ad-free. And speaking of ads, let us tell you about our sponsors. Tim, you know what's funny? Is that whenever we do the transition to ads, there's usually somebody in chat that'll be like, 6 out of 10, 9 out of 10, and they'll rate our transitions to the ads. So I did it this time, and legit, as we transitioned to ads, I was like, all right, I can't wait to see what I got on that one. I hope it's at least a 7, a 7 out of 10. And then, like, 30 seconds pass, and then I think it was Sphinx's chat that was like, I don't rate Blessing's ads. And I was like, wait.
The one time we asked for
the one time where I'm like, yeah, I can't wait to see what I got. He's like, no, I don't rate Blessing's. So I'm like, oh, shit. I always see it for Tim's.
I love it.
Rate
so
mine,
much.
Goddammit.
Bless, real quick, I wanted to bring this up that, you know, talking about Metroid Prime, you playing on Switch. I've been playing a lot on the Switch, and I know I'm a broken record with this, but I just fucking love the Switch OLED so much. Mm-hmm. There is something about the vibrancy of the screen that I just have never seen. I have an OLED phone. I have OLED TV, OLED monitor. I have OLED for fucking days, all right? And there's just something about the quality of the Switch's OLED that just blows me away. And I find myself just pulling up games just to see, what does that look like? What does that look like? And it's always a great answer. But the Nintendo Switch Online just dropped, so the GBA and Game Boy updates, so I've been like playing through some of those things. Did I casually play through all of Super Mario Brothers 3 in the form of Super Mario Advance 4? Yeah, I did, you know? And it looked so damn good. But you know what else I pulled up that I was like, I just want to see what this looks like on
Kuru Kururin.
Oh, I did. I did. Which I've never played that before.
Yeah.
Pretty fucking cool.
It's a really fun game. Yeah,
yeah. I like it. Hades.
Oh.
Which might be my new, y'all motherfuckers need to see. When I'm sounding crazy talking about the OLED Switch, you need to see Hades on the Switch, man. The colors and the black outlines are just, holy shit, man. It looks so good. And I was like, I guess I'm doing a run, you know? And then it reminded me, we got a Hades 2. We don't talk about that enough, man. Hades 2 is coming, bro.
Let's go. Remember on the Gamescast predictions for Game Awards where we talked about it? And we're like, oh, yeah, I could see another thing from that studio. Well, what if it's a Hades 2? And then the next...
Can you imagine?
Yeah. And then the next day it happens. Like, goddamn, what a world we live in. What a timeline. Don't destroy it, King. Story number 3. Redfall crossplay has been confirmed. This is directly from @PlayRedfall on Twitter. Crossplay confirmed between Xbox, PC Game Pass, Steam, Epic Game Store. This is from their Q&A that they did a whole thing on, right? And the person asked, in regard to crossplay, can we play with Steam friends while on Game Pass version, or would we need to all be on the same platform? Then yeah, they answered, you can definitely play with your friends on Steam. You join your friends wherever they are. Love to see it.
You do.
Love to hear it. Continue the crossplay feature. What sucks is that I saw this pop up, and I was like, oh, sweet. I can play on my PlayStation with my friends on Xbox. And I was like, oh, fuck. I forgot this ain't coming to PlayStation. God damn it. I miss you, Bethesda.
Cool, bro.
But yeah, this is pretty awesome. Yeah, go get them.
Yeah, for sure. Love to see this stuff, and especially in this tumultuous world we're in right now where at any moment, who knows who's going to acquire who and what's going to limit what. Like, I love that their Xbox is you know, building this platform of our games work with PC and with Xbox. You can play together. They've been doing that for years. The whole crossplay being broken open. Like, again, here we are in 2023, and it's just like, yeah, we expect it. Can you imagine going back in 2016 and telling us on this show, oh, yeah, we're going to be mad when games don't have crossplay?
Oh, yeah. Like, this is one of the big talking points years ago when the Epic Game Store first became a thing, and one of the key complaints people had was, well, I want to play with my friends on Steam. I don't want to be separated from my friends on Steam. And like, if we could just tell ourselves that, hey, a few years down the line, that's not going to be an issue. Like, we're just going to have crossplay for games, right? And that's going to start to become a thing. Normalize this, right? Yep. Let me play, if I'm on Xbox, the PC Xbox app, let me play with my friends on Steam. Let me play with my friends on Epic. Let me play with my friends on any other PC store, right?
But even not PC. Like, looking at Call of Duty, like, I never thought there'd be a world where PlayStation gamers and Xbox gamers are playing Call of Duty together.
Yeah.
But now they are.
Hell yeah. Go get them.
Go get them, everybody.
Story number 4. Counter-Strike 2 could be announced this month, it is claimed. This is Jordan Midler at VGC. Counter-Strike 2 will be announced and reportedly enter beta as soon as this month, a prominent esports journalist has claimed. That's according to Richard Lewis, a journalist with a long record of breaking Counter-Strike-related stories, including a match-fixing scandal in 2015. According to Lewis, speaking to sources under the condition of anonymity, quote, a new version of Counter-Strike is on its way, and it's been worked on for some time, end quote. He said, quote, the new version is almost certainly set to be released under the working title Counter-Strike 2, and the tentative release date for the beta is this month of March with April 1st at the outside, end quote. According to Lewis's sources, the game is about ready to go and has already entered limited testing, which reportedly took place at Valve's headquarters in Seattle. Backing up Lewis's claims are new NVIDIA drivers that introduced support for two new unknown apps, CSGOS2.exe and CS2.exe. What could those be? These are reportedly related to Counter-Strike 2 and have been implemented by NVIDIA ahead of the launch of the beta. Lewis's report goes on to say that work on Counter-Strike 2 has seemingly contributed to a relative lack of work on CSGO issues. Quote, the big priority is getting this out and then polishing it. Fixing any bugs and bringing it up to the level people expect from Counter-Strike, according to Lewis's sources. The game will, unsurprisingly, reportedly run on the Source 2 engine. Sources also claimed to Lewis that the game would feature servers that would run at 128 tick, bringing it in line with rival title Valorant, end quote. Valve has yet to comment on the project. Counter-Strike GO remains the most popular game on Valve's Steam platform, regularly attracting more than 1.3 million players per day.
This is wild. I can't wait to see what this actually turns into. I mean, it's crazy to think back to Counter-Strike of what it was. I mean, even now, 1.3 million players a day. Like, it is still a major success. Mm. Counter-Strike was everything in the late 90s.
Yeah.
Everything throughout the early 2000s. Like, I remember it being Counter-Strike 1.6 being, like, the version everybody loved the most. And then they came out with the other ones. That there was Counter-Strike Blue something or other. There was a bit more of, like, a weird campaign thing. But my friends, Alfredo, like, I lost Alfredo to Counter-Strike. Like, I've told the story so many times, but, like, junior year of high school, like, there were, like, large swaths of time where he just wouldn't come to school because he was playing freaking clan matches in Counter-Strike. And, like, we had to kind of sit him down and be like, bro, you got to figure your fucking life out. And my other best friend, Curran, like, same thing. Like, they would just play constantly. That's all they did. I remember when it came to Xbox for the first time, Counter-Strike was on console, there was no split screen. And, you know, here we are talking about crossplay and how we just expect it. A fucking first-person shooter coming out without split screen was like, what the fuck are you talking about? Like, who do you think you are? And it's just funny nowadays to be here. And then Counter-Strike Go came out, and, you know, that was, like, super popular with everybody going out with their AR phones and catching all the terrorists in real life. But
God damn it. I was like, wait a second. Is this a feature? I haven't played much CSGO, but I didn't know there was a phone element. Holy shit.
No, but Counter-Strike Global Offensive has been a major success. And, you know, there's been issues with it in terms of monetization and all that stuff. That's modern games. But Counter-Strike Source, when it first came out, when the Source engine was a thing in the early 2000s, like, it was such a pushing the tech forward, all eyes on it, Half-Life 2 obviously being such a big deal. And when they released Counter-Strike Source, it was beautiful, but I know a lot of people had issues. They wanted the more pure 1.6 type stuff. But now the Global Offensive has kind of, like, changed the playing field a bit. I'm really interested, like, Source 2, Counter-Strike 2, are they just going to straight up call it that? Like, I don't know, but
I mean, I think that'd be the thing to call it, right?
It'd be wild.
Like, that would sell, because I imagine it'd be free to play. Cool. Is Global Offensive free to play? This might be a kind of funny,
it's
wrong
definitely
question.
A wrong thing. I don't know, but yeah. I imagine it is.
I think you would want to make it free to play, right? And then, like, go off of microtransactions and all that stuff. And yeah, like, putting out another Counter-Strike that's working off Source 2 that could go.
It is free to play.
Head to head. Free to play, thank you. That could go head to head with Valorant, right? Like, Valorant right now is dominating in terms of conversation and the amount of players that it has. If you can put up another follow up to Counter-Strike that is like, all right, now here's ours. Like, here's our version of it, right? Like, I think that is going to be hot, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Story number 5, our final news story for the day. Fortnite is reportedly getting a first-person mode next season. This is Jordan Midler at Video Games Chronicle. Fortnite's first-person mode is likely coming to the game next season. That's according to regular Fortnite leaker HypeX on Twitter, who claims that the mode will be introduced during the next season of content, although how it will be introduced to the game is not yet known. While several guns in Fortnite already feature a first-person perspective when aiming down sights, this mode will seemingly lock players to the mode during all phases of gameplay. Season 2 of Fortnite's latest chapter is already reportedly going to feature a battle pass, which is heavily themed on the popular Attack on Titan anime. The current Fortnite season is due to come to an end on March 8th, although when the next season will officially begin is unknown. While March 9th is likely, it's possible that it could be later than that, as the end-of-season events that Fortnite has become known for have often taken the game offline for multiple days. Cool.
Yeah.
It's always fun to see interesting new features added, right? Like, I feel like this has become more of a common thing now to get third-person modes in a first-person shooter or first-person modes in a third-person shooter.
Or VR modes or whatever.
Or VR modes, yeah. All that stuff. And Call of Duty did that. When I logged into the latest Call of Duty game, I was like, oh, shit. When the fuck did we start doing this? Third-person Call of Duty? Cats and dogs sleeping together? Like, what the fuck is going on here? But yeah, like, people love getting features like this, and so good on them for adding it.
Yeah, it's interesting because I never thought we'd get a no-build mode in Fortnite, and then we did, and now it's super popular.
Yeah.
So this could hit... what's the vibe on this? Are people excited about this? Like, would they be?
I mean, I don't know. Like,
we would have to ask our Fortnite experts like Kevin and Joey to see really like what the word on the street is, you know?
Yeah, I would think that it's like all right, cool, I'll try it out. Like, yeah. I don't know anybody that was clamoring for first person with Fortnite. That said, when you aim down sights in Fortnite and it does shift to first person, when they added that, I was like, oh, this is fucking cool as hell. Like, I'm glad that they added it. So the idea of a first person mode, to me, it could be cool, but it's not something that personally I've been asking for. I've heard people asking for.
Yeah, I like the third person because I feel like it differentiates itself on top of the art style and just like what the gameplay feel is like from other battle royales and stuff like that. So it'll be interesting to see how many people come back specifically because it becomes first person. Like, I wonder if this grabs Nick. Like, I wonder if this is like one of the things.
Interesting.
That,
oh,
like,
shit, yeah.
Because it's a more of a third-person game. Like, I wonder if that's one of the elements that, like, holds him back from getting really into Fortnite. It'll be interesting to see.
I mean, that is. I think that is what helped with the no-building mode, the fact that there's a large portion of that player base that didn't bother to learn building or didn't even want to get involved with the building because it felt a little bit too much. And no-building became the main way that my friends would play Fortnite. And so whenever I'm joining up on them, I'm like, oh, let's go. Okay, no-building, let's do it, zero build. I could see that, yeah. I think the Nick example is great of, oh, yeah, here's somebody that plays Warzone. Here's somebody that plays first-person shooters that doesn't usually play Fortnite, but their friends are now going to play Fortnite and go, hey, there's a first-person mode in this that's going to be more akin to what you're used to. Okay, cool, let's try it out. Like, I think that could speak to that audience.
Yeah, really cool. We'll have to see. Fortnite out there doing stuff. And I think the Attack on Titan stuff's interesting to bring up, too. It's like, I just love that they can have battle passes that are heavily themed on an anime. And it's just like they are able to do that while also having Adonis Creed. Like, good for them.
I want to see Adonis Creed. I'm sure somebody will make this video. Give me Adonis Creed taking down a Titan. Because, you know, for a fact, there's going to be an event one day where a Titan invades the Fortnite map and everybody's going to have to work together to take out the Titan and they'll do the grappling hook shit that they got in that anime.
And then you record that video and then send it to Michael B. Jordan because that's got to be the coolest shit for him ever.
Yeah.
Because he's such a weeb.
Yeah. Oh my god. But yeah, let me see Adonis Creed taking out a Titan with his fists.
Love it.
Tim, I can't wait for that video.
I can't.
But the Titan invading the Fortnite map event is just so far away. If I want to know what's coming out to Mom Grab Shops today, where would I look?
The official list of upcoming software across each and every platform is listed by the Kind of Funny Games Daily Show hosts each and every weekday.
Yeah. We've not talked about Creed 3. I know y'all did the in-review last Friday, but
it's live now.
It's live right now. You can go check it out.
Kind of Funny.
Fire-ass movie. I fucking love that movie.
Real good movie.
Oh, God. Jonathan Majors, man.
Jonathan Majors. The Majors watch.
That man can act his ass off. He scared me more in Creed 3 than he did in the Ant-Man movie. I was like, this motherfucker is a villain. Holy shit. Out today, we got Dead Cells, Return to Castlevania for PS4, Xbox One, Switch, and PC. Speaking of Metroidvanias.
This is perfect. I want to see Dead Cells on my Switch OLED.
Oh, hell
yeah. I am doing that today for sure.
Did you play Dead Cells back in the day when that came out?
God, oh, yeah.
What a fucking
when
game
we went
that
to
is.
Cisco's wedding in Maryland. We had, or no, Massachusetts. Where the fuck?
What a start to a story.
Minnesota. It was in Minnesota. Thank you, Mike.
Was Mike there? How did Mike know that?
I needed a game to play. I was like, you know what? IGN just gave Dead Cells a 10. And I was like, I'm going to try it. Last time, IGN gave something a 10 I'd never heard of. It was Celeste, which I ended up fucking loving. So I was like, I'm going to give this thing a shot. I played it the entire flight and the entire flight back, like nonstop. Man. And it was so good. Did you play Dead Cells?
Oh, I love Dead Cells.
Oh, yeah. It's so good.
That's like one up there for like roguelites. The roguelite conversation is top three for me.
Oh, yeah.
Top two. But I haven't returned to it in a long time.
But the idea, I haven't returned to it either. Yeah. I'm a little scared, but like, I hope, is this like its own just thing?
You gotta, so yeah, we got codes for this. I haven't had time to actually like get into it. And I know Roger was trying to get into it. So it's like you install it and then you have to open up the main game. And then there's like an in the game you like do something to kind of trigger the start of the Dead Cells stuff.
But I don't know. Castlevania stuff.
Castlevania stuff. And I imagine because of the roguelike nature, like you don't have to be super far into the base game itself to really, dive into the Castlevania stuff. So.
What I'm scared of is like, am I going to start it and I'm going to be trash because I've not played it in 6 years? But we'll see.
Hell yeah.
Let's fucking go. And then Sherlock Holmes, The Awakened remake launches. Well, this is a new date, actually. So new dates for you. Sherlock Holmes, The Awakened remake launches April 11th for Xbox One and Xbox Series X, PS4, PS5, Switch, and PC. And then Wolcen, Lords of Mayhem, Endgame Chapter 4 launches March 15th alongside the console versions for Xbox One, Xbox Series X, PS4, and PS5. Deal of the day for you. You know what? Barrett texted me a deal of the day. Let me see what that was. Oh shit. No way. All right. This is a Mario Day sale for March 10th. Hold up. I'm opening up in a new tab. The internet is slow. Maybe Twitter is slow. I saw Twitter was going through some things. $39.99 for select Mario Switch games. You can get Mario Odyssey for $40. You can get Mario U Deluxe, Mario Kart 8 Deluxe, Mario 3D World, plus Bowser's Fury, Super Mario Maker 2, Super Mario Superstars, Luigi's Mansion 3, Donkey Kong Tropical Freeze, Yoshi's Crafted World, and then Bowser himself. You can just buy Bowser. Wow. You can buy the big dragon Bowser just to live with you. All for $40. Go get him. How much time we got? We got a little bit of time left in the show. So now it's time for reader mail. Of course, you can write into kindoffunny.com/KFGD to get your questions read on the show. Tim, I'm going to give you a choice of questions. We've got two questions we can choose from here.
Let's go number two.
Number two? All right, let's go number two. This is still Chewy, who writes in to kindoffunny.com/KFGD, just like you can, and says, what's the best rap song made for a video game? The DK rap comes to mind for me, but then there are bangers like Wiz Khalifa's Can't Be Stopped from Mortal Kombat 10's reveal. And then Snoop Dogg's Knock Him Down from Tekken Tag Tournament 2 is also a song that exists.
It is a song that exists. That is true.
Keep Killing It, KF Crew. It's a question Taylor made for you and me, Tim.
I fucking love it. I mean, there is the number one answer that I literally do not think can be beat. I've talked about this moment so much in the last year, but it is, of course, Wu-Tang Clan doing the final boss fight in TMNT, Shredder's Revenge. Song made specifically for the game. The beat is done in the style of classic 90s Turtles vibes. It's just utterly fantastic. Anytime Mega Man's in a game is also great. Mega Man does a lot of custom stuff. Even back with the Mega Man 9 and 10, he did some things.
It was Mega Man's song the first one that pops up of like actual lyrics coming into the game? I'm trying to remember. Like that, the first
what game
of TMNT?
No, Mega Man's not in the game itself. He's in the credits.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, the first rap song was just a dev.
Oh, okay. There. Well, that song kicked ass, too.
I fucking love it. So fun.
Because that was like the skateboarding level, too. And it's so goddamn good.
Yeah, this is a tough question. Because honestly, if you asked me the best one, I'd maybe see DK rap just off of icon status of DK rap. I do like the Knock Him Down from Tekken Tag Tournament 2. I wouldn't say that's the best one, but like, shout out to that one. That was during a Snoop Lion era, if I remember correctly. Like, I think those things coincide a little bit. And so I remember like booting up Tekken Tag Tournament and being like, oh, Snoop Lion. Snoop Lion. Shout out to, again, not the best, but I think it deserves a shout out. Blood and Truth soundtrack is like this cinematic score combined with British or UK grime rap that is, I think, slaps. I think it's fucking fire. I actually have the vinyl at home for Blood and Truth, which is like a PlayStation London studio VR game, right? A VR action game. But the soundtrack goes so hard. I recommend looking that up on Spotify and giving a couple of those songs a listen.
One that I want to shout out is the last battle version of Burn My Dread on Persona 3. There are a couple of tracks that like kind of come back throughout the entire soundtrack, essentially, and then the way that they're melded together for the final battle is some of the most, like, it's up there with the TMNT final battle of just super get hype. Holy shit, it's really great.
Shout out to Street Fighter Third Strike.
Yeah, just in general.
Just in general.
But the thing is, though, I don't think there's a standout that I would name, at least. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just a vibe more than anything. But
for sure.
I love that freaking, like, jazz hip-hop shit they got going on.
God, it's so good. Tight. A shout out also to Ghost Pumpkins.
Yeah,
soup
I was about to bring it
Sonic
up.
Adventure
I, about,
2. Yeah,
I don't know that it's best, but definitely it is iconic when it comes to video game rap music.
Yeah, just
any Knuckles shit in general.
Oh, man, it's hard. I feel like there are like fire ones that I can't pull, or maybe they're all just like all right. Maybe there's not like
well,
a
lot of things are like
standout.
A lot of the more iconic rap things I think are licensed. They're not so much like made specifically for the game.
Yeah.
But. We got some good ones. We named some good ones.
Yeah, we named some good ones. Again, shout out to, and also, I know they still Chewy mentioned it in the question, but yeah, shout out to Wiz Khalifa's Can't Be Stopped for the Mortal Kombat X reveal. Like, that was a trailer that I went back and I watched a million times.
Oh, dude,
like,
that trailer's phenomenal.
It's fucking hot as hell.
It set the stage. It was like, hey, this is Mortal Kombat, man. Like, 9 was the reboot. It's 10, baby. Yeah. X.
And people in chat were saying this. I don't know if it counts, but I'll shout it out, the Poke Rap. Made for an anime. It's not really made for a game, but I see how you get there.
Yeah, that doesn't count.
But I wouldn't count it, but
that's
sure.
It's like saying Avatar The Last Airbender is an anime. Like, no, it's not quite there. Yeah.
Now it's time to squat up. Again, you can write into kindoffunny.com/KFGD to squat up. Waters writes in with a squat up on PlayStation and says, "Hey y'all, I'm looking for some help in Destiny 2 Lightfall. My usual crew dropped off of Destiny some time ago, and I'd like to meet some new guardians to squat up with, and hopefully knock out the new raid when it drops. If you want to play with Waters, you can add Waters with the username Mr. H2O. That is spelled MRH2OH. Again, that is MRH2OH. You can probably find that in the video description if you need help spelling that one.
Motherfucker's name is, his last name is Waters, and he goes by
Mr. H2O. That's fire. That's fire.
Good shit.
Now it's time for kindoffunny.com/you're wrong, where you write in, let us know what we got wrong as we got it wrong, so we can correct it for those watching later on YouTube and listening later on podcast services around the globe. Albatross writes in and says, CSGO has more concurrent players than Valorant and is actually the most played game on Steam. There you go.
Hell yeah.
There you go. I don't think I disputed that, but it is good to chat out. I was comparing them in terms of being competitors, so a good one to throw out. It's not a you're wrong. And it's not a you're wrong. That's it.
Hell yeah. We killed it. I'm gonna say right now, we're not even gonna read the host for this week because that it might change. And you know what? It already is gonna change. I told you guys last week I was gonna do the show with Gary Whitta. Guess what? I'm not doing the show with Gary Whitta.
Fucking dodged. Gary's he's
a busy man.
He bit in the eyes by a snake and then choked on his toast and beans for breakfast.
Damn.
Yeah, that's what happens. No, that's what happens.
I promise y'all, we are trying to get Gary. We will get Gary as soon as we can get Gary. Gary's just out there making that money. You know what I mean? He's doing his damn Gary Whitta thing. So
right, 10 Star
one day
Wars,
he will bless this
and another book
again.
Of Eli. God bless him.
Mm-hmm.
If you're watching this live right now, after this is going to be the one and only Kinda Funny morning show with Mike, Nick, and Andy. They've been in the back getting set up for that, and so I know it's going to be a banger. I see a basketball over there. I think I just spoiled the thing, but there you go. They've got a basketball over there. But figure out what that's about.
Hold on. Before we end the show, I forgot something important. Microsoft sent us a plushie Series S, all right? It looks just like a Series S. And this is going to be a great way to end the show here, all right? It's adorable. You can see a little character there. Touch it, bless.
Oh, it's soft. It's very soft.
So it says, "Squeeze me and I'll blow your mind. Fast next gen alive, kinda. Get me out of this box." So what I'm going to do is I'm going to squeeze it, and y'all are going to see what happens. I don't know where the squeezer is.
Is that batteries? Do we know it has batteries?
Oh, well, 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 well. If it isn't the Rascals, that kind of funny. Hey, would it be weird if I did an audition right now to be the newest member of the group? Like, so far, you don't have any talking plushy Xbox Series S's, and I totally fit that bill. Look, I can be the member of the gang who just says controversial stuff in the middle of discussion. Here, you all start talking, and I'll just throw some stuff out. Go. Are you kidding me? I'd rather watch a video of a hamster taking a bath in a New Orleans gumbo! Ooh, no, I disagree. And so does your grandmother. Yeah, we talk. A lot. Almonds, pistachios, hazelnuts, macadamia nuts. In that order! Alright guys, so do I get the job?
Holy shit.
I needed y'all to listen to every second of that.
Holy shit.
Somebody recorded that for what that long.
I am.
I love it. So now,
wow. Plus,
if you want it, it's yours.
I don't, a lot just happened right now that I don't understand. I'm so confused.
You gotta love it, dude.
What the fuck?
A cute little guy. Good to have some green boots.
Is there an IGN version that like tries to like, you know, tell Pierre Schneider to hire them too? Like, what the fuck is going on here? Yeah, no, I feel like I got pranked. Like, I don't, what the fuck just happened?
Gotta love it, everyone.
All right, there you go. Thank you. Xbox sent this to us?
Yes, they did.
All right, thank you, Xbox, for the plushie and the audition. Ladies and gentlemen, this has been another episode of Kinda Funny Games Day, of course. Each and every weekday live right here on youtube.com/kindafunnygames and twitch.tv/kindafunnygames. We run you through the nerdy news you need to know about. Until next time, Game Daily.